The Babylon Project was our last best hope for peace. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for victory. The year is 2260. The place, Babylon 5.
Hello and welcome to Chats, a television podcast, Season 6, Chatsalon 5. My name is Alan, and please, please, dear listener, do not thump the Book of Magellan. It is disrespectful. Hi, Magellan.
Ow!
Ow! My book!
Ouchie. Hey, man.
Right in the lit.
Oh, the lit. What is the lit?
I have so much lit on my desk right now, and it's been expanding every couple of months.
Okay. All right, break it down. What do you got?
I've had books that are sitting here since November of 2017.
Yes.
They've just been...
Yes, pile them up.
But I got to read all of them now.
What do you got?
Well, I still have that Babylon 5 book that I like got two thirds of the way through and then kind of burned out. I have a couple of essay books. I have this cool copy of Dante's Inferno that our friend Jim got me when he went to Italia. And I have that television essay book there's like an essay left in there that I haven't read. I just keep meaning to get to it. But there's always new stuff, and I'm always just like, what if I got more books? I'm in a book loop. A book loop.
Book. Should we, you want to start a book club there, buddy?
We should definitely start a book club. We'll make it a patron thing.
Book? Yeah.
That's how you get the kids committed.
Stay tuned.
How have you been? What kind of lit are you snacking on?
Oh, I was snacking on... I don't know.
Okay.
Like, what am I reading? What is this show that we're doing? We don't read.
We watch things.
Yeah, what are we watching?
Well, Magellan, this here on Chatsalon 5 is the show where we watch two episodes of Babylon 5 every week. And this week, we watched Season 3, Episode 13, A Late Delivery from Avalon. And Season 3, Episode 14, Ship of Tears. A Late Delivery from Avalon was written by JMS. It was directed by Michael Vahar. It aired April 22nd, 1996, and it takes place somewhere in July of 2260. Magellan, what happened in A Late Delivery from Avalon?
In this episode, a man has come to Babylon 5 claiming to be Arthur Pendragon, the legendary king of the Britons. Meanwhile, Garibaldi is having a dispute with the post office.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god. And the part, this is what's up with the Amazon summaries.
They don't mention the post office.
The Amazon summary was like, Babylon 5 tries to get aliens to help them with their airship. And that was literally 3 minutes of the episode.
Sheridan urges the planetary leaders to ratify the peacekeeping Babylon Treaty. What? When did that happen? What? No.
That sounds so important when you write it out like that. And yeah. That was two, maybe three scenes of this episode.
I want to somehow meet the person who writes these Amazon summaries. Because a human has to write that, right? It can't be like machine.
At some point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Ugh. So let's talk about that part first. And then... You know, if we don't end up talking about the other stuff, it's not a big deal.
Okay, go for it. This is good.
What is it, basically? Sheridan and Ivanova are like, okay, we need more protection. So what we're going to do is we're going to get the little alien worlds, the non-aligned worlds, to try to pledge us some of their support. And then there's a scene where Sheridan and Ivanova are saying, hey, we... know that you maybe think the Babylon 5 isn't going to keep the peace super well because you're all fighting each other, but it's still a good place for commerce and diplomacy. Oh, neutral territory. Have you heard the intro to the show? So they kind of pitch them on it in a way that feels, I don't know, it feels kind of weird. It feels like a consulting firm sort of moment. And then the aliens are reading their brochure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what comes of that. Then there's another scene where Ivanova says, hey, they want to help us, but I have bad news about something else. And then, bad news about, I don't even remember. And then we cut back to the other plots. And that's it. That's all we get from that.
Pretty much.
That's the whole plot. There's nothing else.
Well, they're building up. I respect the long game of the Babylon 5 writing team to mm-hmm. say, like, okay, we have a lot that is going to form the foundation of this war. And once it pops off, which, as we see later, is about to happen, we need everything to be exactly in order. We need you to know who the allied races are, who the good guys are, why they joined, who got them to join. Like, they're just like digging deep into these like details that I think are important. But I mean, again, this is a plot that I have no notes on because it takes place in an episode that mostly features a man that thinks he's Arthur Pendragon fighting criminals on the down below. So, like, they don't have the time to flesh out this, like, diplomacy plot because
You have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once?
About the TV show Babylon 5. I, like, heard the rhyme scheme and I couldn't not leap on it. Jump on it. I wish I had more to say about this.
Plot?
No, not the Arthur. I have plenty to say about the Arthur plot.
Oh, yeah, great. Okay, great.
Let's pivot to that then, yeah.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
About the diplomacy stuff, I just, like, yeah, it's. I do think it's important that they, like, figure out how to get different people to join their alliance because they need them, and they're like, hey, if the shadows attack, don't be at war with each other, and maybe help us out because we're going to lead the charge. So, please, be cool for 5 minutes. Thanks, guys. Anyways, the Arthur plot, the reason we're watching this episode, it's just one of the best subplots. No, it's not. This is terrible, if you ask me. It's performed well. Let's try and say nice things. Positivity. The actor who plays Arthur Pendragon, a.k.a. David McIntyre, a.k.a. sad British man number two, is good. Michael York, pretty good. But he has the unfortunate circumstance of playing a character type that we've literally seen on Babylon 5 before. You know what I mean? The like, hey, you have a fake memory planted in your head by Earth government to, you know, fix your brain or whatever. Like, we've seen this exact sort of guy before. Comes onto the ship, thinks he's one thing, turns out he's not that thing. I mean, that's the priest episode too, but which was handled exponentially better than this.
Right. Yeah, the priest episode was way better. And same, I mean, not the same thing, but same thing. Guy thinks he's one thing and then finds out that he's a different thing.
Yeah.
He goes mad or something.
Right. There's some cool cinematography in this section. Like in the beginning of the episode in the cold open, and then in the end of the episode, we see this like black and white footage of him on a ship. It's not necessarily a ship. It's like his image of his death, basically. I mean, this is even like the guy who had to like loop the end of his life over and over again. Like they keep doing this thing where it's like, here's a regular dude who died because people in war are throwaway, as Bester says in the second episode. And so we, instead of like just letting him die, we decided to use him for our own means. It's like, what are you? And then they do this thing, if you'll... you know, Magellan and I, we text each other a lot before episodes, as people know. And so he comes on the ship. He thinks he's Arthur. Everyone's like, he can't be Arthur Pendragon. That doesn't make any sense. We already did time travel, so it's not right. He must be someone else. Franklin finds out that he is... Franklin and Marcus find out. They're like the new tag team duo. It's weird. That he's actually this David McIntyre guy who worked for the Earth Army and then died in the Earth-Mimbari War. And... was put into cryostasis or something and is back now and is reliving his death. Him being a vigilante on the ship is actually really fun. I think that was like my favorite stuff in this episode. like him just having motherfucking Excalibur and just cutting criminals down is
why,
like,
why did he have a sword?
Because he's Arthur. This is the other thing. You remember how we talked about how, like, I'm sorry, what are you saying?
No, go ahead.
I've exhausted Magellan.
Go ahead.
This show, when they have like Shakespeare on, it's like, wow, every sci-fi show does Shakespeare. And it's like, now every sci-fi show does like the vigilante, the guy comes on and is like, I'm gonna kill the criminals. And now it's like, oh, also every show writer in whatever writing school learned about Arthurian legend and was like, that's the template for right. every story is there right, has to be right. a Lady of the Lake, there has to be an Arthur, there has to be a Lancelot, like this is the story. Instead of interrogating why we don't tell stories exactly like that anymore, they just kind of see it as like, yeah, that's the basic story. The Arthurian legend, if you read about it, is also like bad and messed up and, you know, historically weird, and it's not it's not a good template for storytelling.
It just doesn't, yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any genuine commentary on the extent to which the Arthurian legend is relevant to the situation they're in. Because what do you get? You, at the end of the episode, you get Marcus saying, oh, we're kind of King Arthur's court, right? Sheridan is Arthur, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, what? The whole reason you had this happening is so you could do that? But that
it makes them seem really smart and cute. It's like,
it's just cute. It's not anything.
The part that frustrated me the most was like, but then who's the Lady of the Lake? And they look at each other as if it's going to be Marcus or Franklin. And then it's like, Delenn walks from off screen, just walks into Arthur's room and is like, yes, it is my job to take away your pain. And then she takes away his pain and then he leaves. Like, what? All right. Cause she's the foreign lady. Like, and there's two women on Babylon 5. Like, what are you, why did you make this episode?
The best thing that I could take that to mean was that he needed to be forgiven for attacking the Minbari. And then maybe Delenn was the one to do that.
But I think Minbari. That happens in the Arthurian legend too, is like the forgiveness comes from the person, the group that you were terrible to. I haven't read Arthurian legend since like early high school. Like, I forget all that crap.
Here's my thing.
Hit me with your thing, please.
So they've done dumb shit like this before. That's mean. I said that in a mean way. They've done ridiculous throwaway one-off stories like this before.
Yeah.
And they even reference some of the ways that those stories have happened. So when the guy comes on, Marcus Cole is like, he's King Arthur, dude. The Vorlons of, you know, remember when Jack the Ripper was here?
We've done this before, guys. He could just be King Arthur.
They probably just did it again. I appreciated that Franklin was like, no, actually, he talks like a modern British dude, so that doesn't make sense. But they referenced that. We were just talking about how in the priest episode, that guy had had the death of personality happen to him.
Yeah.
And then you talked about that other episode where the Mars guy had been programmed by the Psi-Corps. So there are all these different in-universe explanations for what happened to these various throwaway characters. Mm-hmm. And this guy just thinks he's King Arthur because he has PTSD. Like, that's the explanation, I guess. I don't know how medically accurate that is. Maybe that's something that happens to people, that their brains just to protect themselves make them think that they're someone else.
Right.
But like, it's fucking outer space and you've got telepaths and aliens that do shit. And we're doing this story where like a dude just thinks that he's King Arthur. Why?
And like, he wants to save people, and he feels like it's his duty, like he was brought forward in time to save people. It's like,
I appreciate some of that. When Jakar joins him in the fight against the down below mugger guys.
Yeah, that's good shit.
That was a great scene where Jakar sees him being valiant, and then jumps down. It's like, he's got friends too. Does his pose. I loved the scene where Jakar and the guy are in the bar afterwards talking about the battle.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens with Jakar saying that he hasn't been in a fight like that in a long time, where there's no moral ambiguity. It's just like they were the
best. It's so funny. He's just like, super funny. He's like, I'm on a modern sci-fi show where literally no, they're not allowed to have regular good and bad guys. I'm so happy to finally have like an evil, that guy's red, I'm blue. I can beat him up without feeling bad. Yeah, just for once. Right.
I appreciated that being brought into the show to highlight just where we are right now and how complicated things are.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't suspend my disbelief. And, okay, if he is just a guy who thinks he's King Arthur because his brain just got wired that way by trauma,
mm-hmm.
where did he get chainmail and a sword? Like, what did he do? He went down to the store and he bought chainmail and a sword?
Like a good sword. Not even like a fake plastic sword, but like a whole ass real steel sword.
Like, they're doing that in space? They're making chainmail and swords?
He found it somewhere.
I don't know, man. I just can't buy into it.
It's really sloppy. I hope I'm not, like, missing an explanation for why he's here, other than, like you said, traumatized, comes into the present, if he was supposed to do something. You know what I mean? Like, is there like, I'm trying to like scroll through the plot summary and stuff, but there really isn't much.
There isn't anything to it.
Yeah. That's the thing. It doesn't even have like that. Like the closest thing to, you were talking about like maybe interrogating what the characters relating to Arthurian legend is when Jakar is like, oh yes, finally honor. And it's like, okay, so is he the Arthur of our story now, where he's like excited to fight the good fight and be the sword man? It's really like, it doesn't offer a lot. And then there is some other stray stuff that I really enjoyed. I mean, there's the B plot, which there's not much to say, but Garibaldi has a package with a bunch of like snacks and like pepperoni.
Yeah,
he wants to bring.
I like both these scenes. I like them.
All two of them. Yeah,
I was a fan that this was the beginning and the end, because I thought the post office guy gave a good performance.
Mm-hmm. That guy's great
as the like soup Nazi of Babylon 5.
Exactly. Yep.
He's doing. Yeah. That moment where Garibaldi's describing the stuff in the box, and the guy's like, "Ooh, the big long pepperonis or the little ones?" And Garibaldi's like, "Okay, I got him. Yeah, those big long ones." And the guy's like, "Oh, okay, well, you lost me."
Take that away. And then just the like genuine awkwardness at the end when he's like, "Here's your box," and gives him the wrong box, and he's like, "It's a joke.
It's a joke.
I'm doing a joke."
Yeah, that was funny.
I've done that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very funny, and he plays off of Jerry Doyle very well. Like, it's cute. And then Garibaldi at the end being like, "Hey, we don't work for EarthGov anymore, and they used to pay your rent, so you guys don't pay rent. I could look over that for, let's say, 101 credits." Because the amount that it would have cost for him to get his package would be 100 credits. So,
yeah,
it's cute.
I didn't really want Garibaldi to win.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like, meh, okay.
I mean, him using, like, yeah, cop strong arm power is, like, annoying. And it's like, yeah, just humble yourself a little
bit. Like taking bribes or whatever.
Exactly. Cool. Yeah, now we know you're a little bit, you're taking bribes, exactly.
But still fun. Funny
yeah,
scenes.
For sure. Very funny performance. Good stuff. I forgot to mention, speaking of, like, semi-stray notes, the actor who plays David McIntyre, a.k.a. Arthur Pendragon, is Michael York, who's pretty well known, actually. He was Logan in Logan's Run. And more relevant to the Chats brand of television, he was Basil Exposition in the Austin Powers movie.
Cool.
So he was like a main guy. He was Jefferson Van Smoot in How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He's been in so many things. He was Ares in Justice League stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, he's all over. Is he Puss in Boots? He's Puss in Boots in the Shrek movie. Oh, yeah.
That's perfect. Great. Great.
Wait, well, no. Is he Puss in Boots in the 1999 Shrek? Who's Puss in Boots in the actual Shrek movie? Now I want to know who that
1999
is.
Shrek.
Yeah, no, that's a different thing.
What?
Yeah, it's like there's a
1999 Shrek.
Antonio Banderas is Puss in Boots in those movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I forgot briefly.
What are you saying to me? There's a Shrek from
1999? No. There's a film called Puss in Boots from
1999. Oh.
It's like a.
You're like blowing my mind.
Yeah, dude. You didn't know Shrek was a remake?
Oh my god, that'd be insane.
Yeah, and then I feel like I have some other stuff in here. There
were some things. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I liked that when he came onto the ship, the only person who believed him was Mark. No, not believed him, but the only person who played along was Marcus, and I thought that was very good improv for him to be like, guys, it's Arthur. Chill, it's Arthur. Hi, I'm British too. You're British? And then he's like, oh, where's Lancelot? He's like, you fucker, Lancelot's dead. Everyone's dead.
Yeah. I like that moment. Yeah. I liked Marcus in this episode.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'm back to liking him. The line, he's still so self-righteous and just there to criticize everyone. But I actually like him and Franklin playing off of each other.
Yeah.
Because both of them are like, let's help the less fortunate dudes. But they disagree about how best to do that. I thought that was a genuinely interesting moral conundrum. Of, oh, we figured out who he is, do we tell him? And Franklin kind of steamrolling and saying, I know what's best, I'm going to tell him. Another example of Franklin kind of maybe making a bad call.
Sort of, yeah. It's a very, like, impulsive call also.
Yeah.
He sticks to his guns very, very much.
There's a lot of ego in that. In the way that he went about that.
Right. And then, because Marcus is like, let's just let him be Arthur. He's not hurting anyone, and we don't have to traumatize him letting him know this. Like, this is fine. And then Franklin is like, no, it's my duty to help people. And he talks about, like, what's the Hippocratic Oath? You know, you have to do no harm. You're harming him in trying to help him, blah, blah, blah. It's a Franklin type of plot that we've seen before, but yeah, like you said, having Marcus be the other side of that is good. They're good, like, even though they have the same goals, they approach them from opposite moral point of views that I like.
Yeah.
And they also talk in the beginning about, like, there's an illness in the down below that's, like, killing poor people. And then, yeah, Marcus just has to slip in the whole, like, his classic, like, yeah, it would be easier to let these guys die because it won't spread than to help them because they're poor. Like, you're going to let the people in the down below die like you always do. That's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Also check out my phone brooch.
And he, like, knows what it looks like because he's been there himself, kind of thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I also appreciated the conversation they had about Franklin's curious about what Marcus has learned from the Mimbari. And he kind of, there are a bunch of lines that don't really mean a lot. And then he was like, they taught me terror and, like, how to use it.
Oh, and yeah.
Franklin's like, oh, I think I'd like to learn that. And Marcus is like,
No, you wouldn't. That line was so predictable in context that I said it, while he was saying it.
Oh, I remember the Marcus line that actually was also kind of predictable, but I, or no, not as predictable, but I liked, was when he said at the beginning to Franklin that he used to be upset that the world is unfair. But then he realized that if they lived in a fair world that punished, and, like, the reason that people were in the position they were was because things were fair and they deserved it, that would be way more bleak than, like, living in an unfair world where bad things happen to people who don't deserve it.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. That was a nice window into his kind of cynical, but not really cynical. Like, he's just been kind of in really difficult situations, but he's still looking for something positive to come out of it.
I think he serves an important role, from his background, like living in destitution and like knowing what that's like and knowing those people, and then coming into a point where he's like, I have a purpose now and I have something to live for, like in that episode where the people in the down below were allowed themselves to become host to the aliens, where it's like, yeah, everyone's looking for something to live for. We all want something. He just happens to have like that experience that colors his perspective a lot. Like, I don't think a lot of people on the main cast come from lower class.
Yeah.
That I know
I don't
of.
I think so.
It seems like Garibaldi's at least middle or upper class. Same thing, Ivanova, like, comes from a big family and stuff. And Sheridan, obviously, has been a military guy, like, son of a military guy, etc. So, and Delenn's a royal. So, yeah. That's pretty much all I got, though, for this one.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and see if we have any emails. We do not.
Okay.
Cool.
Great.
That was a lot of fun. We will be right back after this brief little musical break to discuss Ship of Tears.
Welcome back to Chat Salon 5. The second episode we watched this week was Season 3, Episode 14, Ship of Tears. It was written by JMS, directed by Michael Vahar. It aired on April 29th, 1996, and it takes place July 24th, 2260. Podcast host Alan Ibrahim.
Wow, there I am.
What happened in this episode, guy?
Well, kid, in this episode, Bester returns to Babylon 5 with secret information about a weapons supply ship and proposes an alliance.
Ooh.
What did you think about Ship of Tears?
It continues to complicate how I feel about Bester. Mm-hmm. And what I think of him, and if I think he's cool or not. I don't know. Because I kind of liked him a little more in this one than the last time we saw him. But I still don't really know if, like, Bester being our cutesy buddy, is that better? Or does that kind of sell out anything about him that was scary before? Because he rolls up. And they have the armed guards, and they're treating him with hostility in a way where it's like, he was fine last time? I don't know. Yeah. What did you think of the episode? Or of Bester?
Yeah. Specifically regarding Bester, like, the whole revelation with him that they're building to in this episode, and then they get to, is this whole, like, him having a motivation to want to fight the Shadows. That goes beyond Psi-Corps, beyond Earth government and all this. I think it like reset. It's designed as an episode to reset the pieces a little bit on the big game board that is the wars. But if the revelation being that his like partner that he was genetically suggested to breed with by Psi-Corps is harboring Shadows, and that's why he wants to defeat the Shadows, is because she has his child and he wants to be a dad. Like, that's really boring, if you ask me. It's just, like, and it like you said, it kind of, like, cheapens him as, like, a insidious person when he's like, oh, no, my love. And just, like, the Walter Koenig being like, she is harboring my child. And it's said in the most, like, bland way ever. And this is in the same episode where he, like, even leans more into... his whole racism thing with Ivanova. I think the whole scene with him and Ivanova at the beginning was great because he gets onto the ship and Sheridan actually recommends that Ivanova speak to him first because she has the ability as a latent telepath to block his reading.
Or
and
at
so,
least to sense if he is reading her, yeah.
Yeah, and so if she senses it, then she knows that he's not on the up and up, and then if she does... But, like, if she senses it and he does read her, then he's going to know that she's a latent telepath. And they play with that dramatic irony in that scene a lot, because he's telling her about how normals like her are jealous, and it's like, you know, whatever he calls it, like, genetic inferiority, and how they're being made obsolete by telepaths. It's very, like, Gundam-y talking about new types, because new types in Gundam are, like, people with psychic connections to each other that can, like, see beyond time and space to communicate. And so he's like, yeah, it really sucks that you don't have these powers. That's really a bummer, and you're never going to have them, and your mom had them, and that's, you know, it sucks. You suck, personally. And then she slaps him in the face because he's saying how she has her mother's eyes, which is scum. Scum.
Yeah, creepy.
Stuff. Whatever, Bester is the main point of the episode, but we're not going to talk about Bester at all. Let's talk about Delenn and Jakar. So one of the side plots of the episode involves Delenn and Jakar talking about whether or not Jakar should be added to the Army of Light, the Conspiracy of Light, the Anal Shalak. Apparently is what it's also called. Okay. Anal Shalak, something like that.
Cool.
This is another like scene I'm really glad that we have. Because Jakar has been known about the Army of Light for a while, and it's just great to see him, like, be addressed like an adult, and they're not trying to hide it from him anymore.
Yeah. That's cool. Delenn says, so Delenn and Sheridan eventually decide over a romantic dinner to let Jakar in on the secret. And Delenn takes it upon herself to explain to him that she knew that his world was going to get totally destroyed.
Yeah.
And she didn't do anything about it. So, yeah. I didn't even think about that, honestly.
Right.
Yeah.
It like plays like a revelation that we should have already known. But when it's said, you're like, oh, wait, yeah, whoa, hold on.
Yeah,
whoa.
That is actually super fucked up, Delenn.
Yeah, I like that about it. It's a well-written, like, reveal. Yeah. I think this is the scene also, yeah, where she's talking to Jakar, and then, like, my favorite line from this episode. I almost used it in the cold open, but then I wanted to just use the don't thump the Book of Jaquan. I believe he says, because she's talking about, like, you know, I can't, it was, like, a million of you versus billions. Is who I had to make, is that's the choice I had to make, was like the Narn homeworld or everyone. And then she's like, we have to think about the future. And he says, it's less about where we are and more about where we are going. I think that one sentence is the greatest burden I have ever known.
Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect work. Because that's like, you can even just relate to that as an adult who's being told, like, you know, in a couple of years, you're going to have to think about this thing. And you have people telling you, like, you know, get ready now, and it's gonna suck for a while. It's like what you have to tell people in high school, and it's just, it sucks to hear that. Like, it's gonna suck, and you know, your life's gonna be bad for a while, but it'll get good.
And I think Jakar is on an interesting journey right now, because he had kind of been taking charge of that idea as a way of giving himself control over the situation. Like, with giving over the Narn as guards for Babylon 5, he was like, oh, I've had this revelation where we need to sacrifice ourselves for others. So we're going to do that voluntarily. And what he's realizing is like, oh, actually, most of the sacrificing we already did, and we had no choice and no agency, and it already happened. And that is like... just draining.
That's the infuriating, like, existentially draining part, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, we've already been sacrificed, and we didn't have a say, and we have to just accept the fact that it was for the best.
The Bester. There is, like, decent amount to like, kind of look for a connecting thread in this episode of people accepting the way things are and working towards eventually changing them. I think it's appropriate, too, that the episode begins, cold open begins, with the return broadcast of ISN, which initially, everybody in the Zocalo and Sheridan and Ivanova and Garibaldi are like, oh, hell yeah, Iacena is back. This is so awesome. I'm glad to have the news back. And they're immediately, it's very clear from second one that they're taken over, controlled by Earth government, have become a propaganda arm of the government, talking about how everybody loves the martial law. They say, like, the much approved and much beloved martial law on Earth. And like, oh, and they, yeah, just watching everyone go from so excited to crestfallen because of the news is honestly a bit of a mood. Like, just being like, is something good going to happen? Are we finally going to get a good one? And it's like, nope, it's actually just shit continues to be bad and we need to fix it. I like that. I like that scene a lot. I'm trying to find the next big moment. We hit a lot of good stuff. I do, again, love all of Delenn Sheridan and Jakar stuff. It's nice to see that Jakar is now, like, in the Army of Light. Because yeah. I think the Narn are going to be an important resource, like the Narn Rebels.
Yeah. And I love, I love how that Delenn Jakar scene ends, where she's like, maybe one day you can find it in your heart to forgive me. And he says, yeah, maybe one day, but
not today.
Not today.
Yeah.
Woof. That's good stuff.
Bark, bark.
Bark, bark, woof, woof.
They actually connect the A and B plots together this episode, which I love when they do that. Because Jakar is talking about the Book of Jaquan and prophecies and how they're going to defeat the shadows. And it's right at this moment that Bester reveals that the reason he's on the ship is he knows about a supply ship that's carrying, he says, weaponry. And he's the only person that's going to be able to help them find it because telepaths, he now reveals, have, like, basically radar, like, really specific, really, like, powerful radar. And they're like, well, I didn't, we know about this before. And then I get, he just kind of, like, BS's something. At first, this seems like an obvious fake out because when they finally rescue the ship, you know, a bunch of them go on the ship and realize, oh, God, it's just bodies. It's all cryostasis bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the little horror movie thing where they like try to look at one of them and the woman pops out and wakes up. And they're like, oh, those aren't just bodies. These are telepaths. In a way, they are weapons, at least according to Bester. This is a telepath carrying ship. So my prediction then was like, Bester is trying to make a telepath army himself. He wants to steal the ship. He's going to use them for his own evil means. It's going to be that simple. And he's going to be like, ha, got you fuckers. And then they rescue them and then he gets away. But it gets silly from there because the woman who was woken up is Carolyn, who in medbay is left alone for like 2 seconds. And they run back into the medbay and she pulls a Jason Ironheart. And just goes, she becomes, basically, not literally, but she makes this, like, H.R. Giger-esque web of all of the computers in the room and, like, wraps them around herself. It's pretty sick, especially because it's mostly
reminded me a lot of iRobot Eugene, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Just, like,
the
dumb.
Buffy, the not early good. Buffy episode, yeah.
Yeah, MODOK?
But she has cool, she has cool powers, though.
She does. She's got lightning powers.
Electricity, yeah.
And she reacts very powerfully negatively to Bester's Psycor badge. So she, like, hates Psycor. He's like, Carolyn, you're carrying my child. And we learn, yeah, they're genetically paired. The ship she was on is not from Psycor, but it's actually a shadow vessel. Because a couple episodes ago, we remember that the shadow ships need human hosts. And so they're thinking, what better human host than a telepath? Because they can... they're stronger mentally. Mm-hmm. But this is where we tie back into the Jakar stuff. Garibaldi is looking for any information about the shadows, and he finds a passage in the Book of Jaquan, which Jakar gave to him. This is good, good, good continuity stuff, by the way. Because he remember he got the book when Jakar went to jail. He finds a passage that basically says that there are people that are, what do they call them? Mind walkers are the ones who the shadows are afraid of. And they were the ones that were used to push back the shadows in the old war. And then they're like, mind walkers? Who can walk amongst... Oh, the other plot in this episode. Duh. And yeah, they realize that it's really just like an exposition dump at this point. Like, PsyCorp is going to be presumably the key to stopping the shadows. Bester, will you work with us? I guess I will if I have to. We have an unlikely ally. And then it gets really exciting at the very end. This is why I was like, I think I mentioned in the first half, like, it didn't seem like we were going anywhere for a while this season. And then this kind of, like, you know, stepped on the gas pedal. Is Sheridan comes in and is like, yeah, there are shadows attacking planets. They are no longer hiding. We are fighting a war against an active enemy now.
Yeah. Whoops.
Oopsie.
Do you think so? Do you think that's because they saw the White Star?
I that would make sense, right? Because we in our discussing our emails and stuff, made a big deal about how when Delenn showed that off, that was like showing their hand.
Yeah, because it felt, I thought they were going to make a bigger deal of the fact that when they initially captured that ship with the telepaths on it, and the shadow ship got away, I thought they were going to make a big deal out of like, uh-oh, they've seen us. They're going to go tell everybody else. But they were, Sheridan was like, I'm just thankful to get out of a fight or whatever, in a way that didn't seem to line up with how intense they were being about their secrecy prior to that point. I guess Right. Maybe them declaring their independence from Earth kind of makes it clear that something's going on. I don't know.
Who declaring their independence from Earth?
Babylon 5.
Oh, right. It's that, yeah, I think it's that plus the White Star, and then, like, they've shown their hands enough times now that the shadows had to be like, okay, there is conflict brewing, at least in some, even if it's not specific, like, they know to start fighting. I mean, it's scary. I think I'm actually curious and interested, excuse me, like, what the PsyCorp being used to fight the shadows is going to mean. Like, do we now have, like, PsyCorp allies? Are the Rangers going to work with PsyCorp? Are they going to try to give this, like, redemption to Bester? Because him having a kid is not a redemption arc to me. That's a false redemption arc.
Yeah, I don't really know what to think of him because he... I couldn't tell what he knew and didn't know. because he was pretending that he didn't know telepaths were on the ship, and then he did. And then I guess it didn't seem like he knew that his lover was there, but and that was a surprise to him, but maybe it wasn't.
I think he knew that she was on the ship, and then he wanted to rescue the ship.
Okay.
That was like why he came to Babylon 5, was just for his lover.
Okay. Because at first it was like weapons, and then it was like saving all these telepaths, and then it was like saving his lover.
Yes, yeah, like the zoom in on like what are actually his goals here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this alliance will last as long as we need to fight the shadows, and then the minute they're gone, we're fighting the PsyCorp.
Right, that's hard.
I think that's how it goes.
It's the temporary alliance that they need right now. I just really, it is really, really rewarding to watch a sci-fi show like this that keeps all of its lore in its head at the same time. Like, doesn't forget the whole shadow vessel person thing and makes a whole plot out of that. And Bester, like, based on what we know about him before and what we know now, is kind of a new character. And, you know, there's a lot. It's just, like, it's building a really good foundation and then, like, getting better and better because of that. It's another one of those, like, this episode in isolation is, like, fine, but I see what they're doing here, and it's like, yeah, we're getting into it. We're crunching into it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and Walter Koenig continuing to, honestly, I mean, do his best. He's performing. He's got the fun voice. Hello, Mr. Gibbs. It's, like, very articulate and very, like, small.
It's, like, sometimes too composed.
Right,
it's like something about it. It's unsettling in the right way. I think he's cast very well, and he's performing the role very well.
Right,
it's just
disturbingly lined up.
I don't know. I'm ready for Bester to turn back fully scary bad guy, and make this weird middle section feel worth it.
Right, or it's like, oh, I remember that because.
Yeah, but remember when Bester was, like, nice for some reason? Weird.
Yeah, that'll be great. Remember I just, relationship to our past podcast, I was watching the pilot of Farscape a couple nights ago because it's on Amazon Prime Video now, and I saw Krace, and I was like, oh my god, one of the best redemptive arcs in television. Are you kidding me? This guy rules. Because he was so, like, the shitty villain, and I remember us being like, why is this guy bad? Like, we're mad because we, like, killed his brother by accident, and, like, he doesn't believe us. And then he gets this full arc and this great sacrifice and all this stuff, and it's like, oh my god, give me that. But they won't. Kanan can't. He's, like, he isn't painted in a villain the same way that Krace was in that show. But he's still good. Anyways, that's what we got. That's what we got, guys. Chip of Tears. It's a laid-back pod. Some laid-back episodes. Stuff's happening. Babylon 5 continues as intended. And I would like to know, Magellan, if you don't mind, what are we watching next week on Chatsalon 5?
All right. Next week, we are going to do something a little different than usual. In a couple weeks, I'm going to be out of the country. So we're going to try to make recording a little easier for ourselves and split things up a bit. So next week, we're only watching one episode, which is Season 3, Episode 15, Interludes and Examinations. And the description is simply, the shadows punish Londo.
Fun.
Yeah.
I've honestly heard this is like an episode we could do a whole podcast discussing, because it's like a turning point.
Great. Then we're doing it on purpose.
Exactly.
Great.
I want to, before we jump into the zone of plugs, read an email that we got like literally a couple hours before recording this podcast, just so we're all caught up on emails for next week, so we can get all of our juicy Ship of Tears emails. This is from our buddy Dan. Do you mind if I read this email from Dan, or do you want to read it?
You can read it.
Okay. Our buddy Dan, his email here is regarding Ceremonies of Light, Ceremonies of Light and Dark, and Sic Transit Vir. He says, this is more along the lines of the Marcus Cole that I enjoy. Not the clown, but a guy masking his pain with humor. And he's shown to be someone who's deeply committed to the An'la Shock, and D'Len in particular. That's the Army of Light. I think it's what they're called in Minbari. He really took it personally when she was grabbed on what he felt was his watch. Yeah, Marcus as a person with like motivation and goals and morals is fantastic. Unfortunately, this episode also reveals that Lanier doesn't just have some sort of alien familial love for D'Len, but shows signs of being what we now deridingly call a nice guy TM. It doesn't help his case that it comes to light in a scene where he's being aggressive to Marcus and reminding him how different humans in Minbari actually are. And yet, D'Len is becoming involved with a human? It almost seems to add a threat of racism to Lanier's confession. Maybe he doesn't like humans so much. I mean, Minbari human relationships, like, and racism towards each other, I totally understand historically, but I'm still deeply disappointed in our boy Lanier for that scene, and hope for just a slight swerve back into good boy territory. He says, I think of the black uniforms as the iconic uniforms when I think about B5. It's one of those indicators that we're into the good part of the show. That being said, I've never been a huge fan of their design. I understand it's meant to be a blend of human and Minbari aesthetics, but I can appreciate the twist of the Army of Light being dressed in black. Even when the show was originally airing, I thought to myself, these uniforms are very indicative of the time this is being made. Even in the 90s, it was possible to see things and say, that's very 90s, which is funny.
Yeah.
He says, what was weird with Sic Transit Vir was that it seemed like there was supposed to be a confusion for us as viewers as to whether Vir would actually kill a couple thousand Narn and then try to paper over it. I can't imagine that any viewer of this show would have ever considered it for a moment. Which is fine, but it's also weird that the command staff believed it. I want it to be like, Ivanova, have you never watched this show? Right. I feel like you don't necessarily... You're expected to believe it for like a cold opens or a commercial breaks length. Because Ivanova says, like, Vir, you killed 2,000 people, and it's like, and then the next scene is him being like, I did it on purpose. I don't know. This is a show where people have such, like, sharp turns that I wouldn't be entirely, you know, knocked on my ass if Vir was, like, if he was racist, I'd be like, yeah, that's messed up. Come on, Vir. We know you're not. But if he was like, I did it for the right reason, that would make me sad. I can't claim to be an expert on Centauri culture or conventions, but I suspect that Abraham Olinconi is not a Centauri name, and that it should have set off red flags all over, at least at Anonymous console.
Yeah.
It's too good. He's too sneaky. I read this in the... I think JMS literally tweeted about this today. Sic transit vir is a bit of Latin wordplay. Obviously, this is the obvious thus passes vir, but vir is also a Latin word, so the saying can be translated to roughly... thus passes the man. A weird thing about this episode is that there's a moment when Lindisti gifts... Oh, this is great. When Lindisti gifts Veer with a Narn who's hogtied in Veer's quarters, and then the scene cuts away and it's never explained what became of that Narn. It turns out there was a cut line from CNC that offhandedly mentions that the guys are covering. So they remembered. I didn't even notice. I was just like, this episode's going places. Oh yeah, that Narn that was like tied up. Is he dead? Did Veer kill a man?
And yeah, then as get resolved.
As with I your hosting guest Marcus, I agree the fifth season doesn't deserve the angst that's thrown at it. I enjoy it myself. I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about when that rolls around, but I wouldn't approach it with the worry that it's going to be, quote, bad. A lot of similar claims were made about Farscape's last season, too, and I'd say that some of that show's best episodes came in that last season. Dan, you're right. I like Farscape's last season a lot.
Yeah.
Even though it's like hella messy. It's been 100 years since we watched it too, so I might be wrong. Thank you, Dan, for the email. We love those damn emails.
Thanks, Dan.
Got it right under the cutoff. Time for the plug zone, baby. Chatspot@gmail.com is where you can email us with your questions and comments and poems. @chatspot on Twitter is where you can do the same. You can and should rate us on iTunes. And you should try to support us, if you can, at patreon.com/chatspod. Thank you to all of our current patrons and to all of our future patrons. I want to actually, in this section, shout out a Reddit user, Jack DT, who made a post on the Farscape subreddit that says, I'm rewatching Babylon 5, so I sampled all the rewatch podcasts and narrowed them down to two. The audio guide is the most informative with great behind-the-scenes stuff. And you're like, wow, that's great. And then he also says, my favorite is a little-known one called Chatsalon 5. And then he goes into detail on why he likes that we are a good first-timer podcast. That's what we got. That's our brand.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jack DT. That's very nice. And that post actually got a decent amount of upvotes, too. So hopefully we have some new listeners this week coming from that. It's flattering. And he even mentioned, like, if you are reading this on the Babylon 5 subreddit and you want to yell at two nuke timers about about upcoming episodes, you can be on their show. And I'm like, hell yeah, bring the guests. So thank you for that. And yeah, I mentioned everything. Magellan, what is your chatsum for this week?
So my chatsum for this week is something that's not I don't think I'm going to introduce, well, maybe I'll introduce somebody to this. It's nothing new. It's a fun I guess meme. I don't know, the word meme I feel like is incomplete. I feel like we need kind of different words for what meme means. I mean, it's like a video editing trend or joke that people do. It is steamed hams, and Alan knows what it is. There's a scene from, I'm sure we've actually talked about it on Chats Nights, now that I think about it. I
feel we read it
on Chats Nights.
Right. Once.
That wasn't on this, right?
No, that was on a night. You're right.
Okay, cool. It is a scene from The Simpsons.
It's from 22 short films about Springfield.
Thank you. I knew you would have the episode title. I love you.
You're welcome.
And it's a scene where Superintendent Chalmers shows up at Principal Skinner's house, and Principal Skinner has prepared a lunch for him. There's no real explanation as to why the principal has like prepared this nice lunch. And then it turns out that his roast is ruined, and he needs to buy hamburgers to feed Superintendent Chalmers. The superintendent sees the smoke and says, "What is that?" Skinner says it's steam from the steamed clams we're having. But then when he serves hamburgers, he says, "Oh, I meant steamed hams. That's what I call hamburgers." And it's just a, you know, whole thing where he keeps lying to the superintendent. The scene alone is funny. And then people online have done every possible edit you could conceive of this scene. So everything from like steamed hams as the song, the Green Day song. Am I just paranoid? Am I just stoned? Whatever that song's called.
What is that song called?
It's to the tune of that song, but it's steamed hams to like Feel Good Incorporated.
It's called Basket Case.
Yeah, Basket Case, Feel Good Incorporated, but it's steamed hams. All the way from that to like hyper specific steamed hams, but Superintendent Chalmers is slightly more suspicious. And people added in like a few more like or change the lines. Steamed hams, but Superintendent Chalmers like is on to it right away.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
It's like a 3-minute scene that has been like torn apart, rebuilt, and reconstituted in infinite ways.
There's a really cool one where it's like steamed hams, but it's a different animator every 7 seconds.
Yeah.
That one's a cool one. So yep. I recommend that people fall down that rabbit hole for like, 30 minutes or whatever.
Right. Time. Just go on YouTube, type in steamed hams and have fun.
Yeah.
Watch the original first. Enjoy the original.
Yeah.
Because it's just funny. Yeah, to speak to what you're talking about with like with memes, I think it's not that memes like and the word needs to be redefined. It's that it's adopted a meaning and like whatever words change their meanings literally constantly. Nothing means anything firmly. Meme has a negative connotation of like, stuff you waste time with on the internet looking at. But meme technically, like, in its origin just means, like, a gestalt. Like, a thing that is commonly accepted to be a thing. So I do think Steamed Hams is a meme in that you watch this and people think this is something you can, like, do an edit on. This is a video that is funny because people edit it. And that's where the, like, sort of commonly agreed upon comedy is.
Yeah.
But we don't need to get into semiotics here.
What's your chatsum this week?
My chatsum, I've been reading a lot this week, like before bed. I'm actually finally getting back to reading. Mm-hmm. And usually when I like get away from reading for a while, the way I get back in is I start reading manga because it's like much more digestible than novels.
Yeah.
And the one that somebody recommended me recently, my friend, is called Goku Shufudo or The Way of the House Husband.
Mm.
It's a, I believe, week-to-week running, like, web manga series that features this guy who used to be a member of the Yakuza, and now he is married to a, like, high-powered businesswoman, and he's a stay-at-home dad. Or not even a stay-at-home, he's a stay-at-home husband. They don't have kids.
Yeah.
And the comedy just comes from the intersection of like Yakuza culture and the fear of being like a big scary man with tattoos and also trying to be a husband that like cooks and cleans and is like caring and very empathetic and nice. Mm-hmm. My favorite, the one that I always show people to recommend it now, is it's pretty simple. It's like a 2-page long strip, but basically he's at the supermarket with his wife. He is looking for some stuff for them to bake. He's got his apron on, and he goes up to the cashier, and he says, I'm looking for the good white stuff. Do you have any of that good white stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Nice and granulated, you know? And then she looks at him in a way that resembles every retail worker all the time. She just looks blank, like, this fucking dude. Like, what? And then he's like, I'm looking for flour. I'm making a cake. And she's like, oh, aisle 6.
Yeah.
And like immediately just like, whew, like breathes out. It's just that. If you like that joke, if you like that whole like thinks it's one thing, but it's actually another thing. It is just that. It's consistently funny. It's actually really beautiful. And I hope they make it into an anime eventually. Because it's just charming and very like inviting and good. It's also like easily readable online. So you don't gotta pay for it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Cool.
And that's what we have. And thank you for listening to this episode of Chats on 5. Peace.